Hello, and welcome to Season 4 of the Dialogue on Dialogue podcast. I'm your host, Phil Reject. This season, you'll hear from some amazing speakers giving prepared speeches, and then we'll talk about what it is that makes a speech great. And all of this isn't an effort to make the world a better place, one conversation at a time. Hello, and welcome to the Dialogue on Dialogue podcast. I am your host, Phil Reject, and I have another very special woman that I'll be interviewing today. She was a Tall Tale finalist for the District 35 contest. So very accomplished speaker with a fantastic and just hilarious Tall Tales speech. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and play her video, and then we will have a chance to talk to Chersti Beth after we watch it.
Chersti Beth, No One Knows Like Joe Knows. No One Knows Like Joe Knows. Chersti Beth.
Rumor had it, very few students had ever gotten an A in the community college's advanced anatomy and physiology course. They had met me. I was a nerd, and a morbid nerd at that. When I had the opportunity to take this prestigious class, I pounced. They let you work on a human cadaver. No more coloring chambers of the heart, no more dissecting frogs. Oh no, I was gonna get my hands on grandpa's guts. And this renowned cadaver was affectionately named Grandpa Joe, and he resided in a stainless steel tank in the basement of the Science Administration Building since the Nixon administration. Joe was an old cadaver. Joe had no skin left from the jawline down. Joe was the color of old rubber bands, and he smelled like him too. But that was okay, because like any anatomy nerd with nothing better to do on a Friday night than memorize the names of deflated skeletal muscles, I would meet with my classmate, Sarah, and we would go to the lab and work on the cadaver and learn words like pectoralis major and tibialis anterior and my personal favorite, sternocleidomastoid. But we hadn't learned the posterior side of the body, so we thought, well, we'll just have to pick up Joe by what's left of his armpits and his ankles and turn him over. How hard could that be? What could go wrong? So that's what we did. We got our positions and we went 1, 2, 3. And I went left. Sarah went right. And Joe went onto the floor. And he smacked his face on the tank on the way down, and he crumpled in this undignified heap of rigor mortis and slime. His rib cage had opened up and all of his gray shriveled intestines bounced onto the ground. And Sarah said something to the effect of, ah, to which I said, no, it's okay. We'll pick him up. We'll just get him back in the tank. It'll be fine. No harm, no foul smell. But Sarah wasn't moving. Sarah was looking at his face, which evidently had gotten squashed during this whole ordeal. And now Joe's nose and lips were completely sideways and resting on his cheek. Now, look, I'm a good student, okay? I don't break things. I'm somewhat intelligent. I'm punctual. I don't disappoint people. I need to make this look like this never happened. So I survey the intestinal carnage around me, and I say, ankles, armpits. And we get Joe back into the tank, and there's a splash of noxious chemicals, and I pounce. I get to work. Something comes over me. I'm rearranging his face. I'm trying to massage the contours of this dead man's face back to their original upright position, and I realize, in this moment, my life is over. I'm dead. I've just defaced a corpse. And now I'm going to have to donate my body to the university to pay for this. But wait. I'm a nerd. I'm a morbid nerd. I know where all the body parts go. And I look to the ground, and once again, I pounce. I pick up a part of a pancreas and an intestine and a heart and some lungs, and it's a blur. I have grandpa's guts, and I put them back in the cadaver. I'm rearranging everything like a mad scientist. And meanwhile, Sarah is standing in the corner of the room with a blunt probe in her hand, frozen, her light flashing before her orbicularis oculi. And I'm rearranging Humpty Dumpty back together, and I finally get to where it looks somewhat normal, and I slam his ribcage shut, and I slam the tank. I mutter an apology to his remaining relatives. I shove the tank into the furthest corner of the classroom, and I'm out of there faster than you can spell formaldehyde. And I got my A. Minus. Sarah changed majors after that. Perhaps even schools. I don't really know what's happened to her. But the point in all of this is I learned a great appreciation for the human anatomy, right? Particularly the rib cage and all the connective tissues that keep our insides from falling onto the floor during a presentation. And I've decided I too will donate my body to science when the time comes. And whether I'm a skeleton hanging in a lab or a crash test dummy, or ooh, maybe even one of those cool mummies on the Body World exhibit. I fully intend to traumatize the next generation of anatomy nerds, or at least leave them laughing their rectus abdominis muscles off. Thank you.
What a wonderful speech. Now I'd like to welcome Chersty. Beth, Chersty, you want to video up?
Hey.
So fun. Such a fun speech. Before we dive into the actual speech and the contest, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us about your Toastmasters journey and you know, what club you belong to, and what got you into Toastmasters in the beginning.
Great. Thank you, Philip. Yeah. Well, I actually started Toastmasters almost exactly a year ago. It was in July, August. So I haven't been in Toastmasters very long, but I have a background in some speaking and music and theater. And so I'm not really new to public speaking. It's just kind of a new way to go about learning some tricks with Toastmasters. So I'm in the Madison Achievers Club in Madison, Wisconsin. And it's hard to believe it's already been a year and one contest under my belt, and I just keep going, I guess.
So why did you, what was it that drew, how did you get connected with Toastmasters?
You know, I had heard of them at a conference I had gone to for my day job, actually, about a year prior. And I didn't know what Toastmasters was. And I had actually said this at the contest I was at. I thought it was like some secret society or some, like, I don't know, weird, dark secret thing. And I just thought, what is Toastmasters? And I looked into it more, and I realized, I learned what it was. And I learned that there was a chapter that met literally like a mile down the road from me on a night that I was available. And I just thought, well, this must be a sign that I meant to go do this. So I reached out to the club director, and I was there, and I signed up the very same day as my first meeting.
Oh,
I
said, cool.
I want to do this. I need to do this. I signed up. So
I always ebb and flow between it's a cult, it's not a cult, it's a cult, it's not a cult. It just seems, depending on the day, depending on the the group. I guess if I'm going to belong to a cult, it's a wonderful cult. It's
absolutely, I agree.
Yeah. Well, that's terrific, and the fact that you've only been at it for a year, I've been in it now for, I don't know, almost 10 years, and I've seen a lot of people, and I've mentored a lot of people, and there are those people who come in with already some fantastic skills like you do, and just want to either hone them or it's an opportunity to express them. And then there's the people who, you know, can't look beyond their shoelaces when they stand in front of a crowd. So it's just so fun to see the variety, for me at least, of all the different people that are in the clubs and all the different reasons they're there. Well, let's talk about your speech. How did you come up with the idea for this amazing speech?
Well, the opportunity of a contest came up and Tall Tales was the division. And I thought, oh, I want to compete because I had competed in high school, you know, 20 plus years ago with forensics and I liked it. And ironically, maybe not ironically, coincidentally, in high school, I won a state forensics contest on the benefits of donating your body to science. And I didn't even remember that until like a few weeks after I'd won this contest. I thought, well, that's kind of a fun full circle moment there. So I had, I've always had this kind of morbid storytelling. And I write a lot of stories. I've written articles and essays, and that's kind of what I like to do. And being able to just have Toastmasters to learn how to practice my own voice instead of reading it on paper, but have being able to express it verbally as well. So I'm getting ahead of myself. What was the question?
Well, no, just how did you come up with the story?
Yeah.
And then
because it happened, it's a tall tale, but most of it's true. So it just, I had actually, okay, I'd written an email. This is like, 20 years ago, I'd written an email to some friends and like my mom, because this thing happened to me in school. And this was before social media. This wasn't, there was no Facebook. This was just, hey, I'm just going to email my friends this crazy story that happened. And I happened to save it because I thought I need this story someday. And so 20 years later, I have this opportunity to tell a tall tale. And I'm just, something's clicking in my head. I'm like, let me see what this is all about. So I looked, what's the definition of a tall tale? I looked at the Toastmasters website. I talked to my mentor. And just learning that it's this highly embellished story of an improbable nature and all the things that they would grade you on or judge you on in the competition, I thought, oh, do I have a story for this. This is perfect. And it was just back in the dark, dusty recesses of my mind. And I found that email because I had saved it. And I rewrote it. I put it together. There's a whole process I'm sure you're going to ask me about, but that's the long answer to your question on where the heck that story came from.
So what you're saying is there really is a Sarah out there who,
maybe we change the names to protect the innocent.
Yeah, exactly. Or guilty. The other thing that I think is remarkable for anybody who was watching your or anybody watching your speech is your playful use of language is amazing. And do you think that comes from? Well, let me just back up a little bit on how I'm asking it. How is it that you go about preparing it? Is it a write the whole speech out and then line by line you're going through it, or is it a trying it in different ways and as you're telling it or as you're giving it, it evolves kind of naturally? How is it that your process works for developing the speech?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both scenarios actually. So I had the email that I had written to myself essentially 20 years ago, and I just read through it and I rewrote that just in like a Word document based on 20 years more knowledge of the English language and writing skills, and just thinking, okay, this is my voice as an adult instead of a 19-year-old, you know, well, adult in quotes. And so I just rewritten it and I added some embellishments. Of course, you know, I added some extravagant wording, and basically my process is just get it out, vomit it out, and see how long it is. And I remember reading it out loud. And it was like 12 minutes. I thought, okay, I got to take stuff out. So it was just kind of that process of a little bit taking things out, reading it, hearing things like humor and being able to have to pause because maybe I'm going to last point. So just trying to time it out and keep rearranging it until it's within that 3 to 5 minutes, which is a challenge, and delivering that as well within that time frame. And that's a good thing about Toastmasters.
So if you were to give this as a, I guess my question would be, are there parts that had to get cut just because you were trying to, I mean, there were parts that I had to get cut, but are there parts that you loved? How many darlings did you have to kill in your process of, were there parts of this story that if you were to give it as a 10-minute speech that you were like, oh, I love that part, but it just didn't fit, or it didn't quite work out the way you wanted it?
You know, there were some parts. That's a very good question. I don't feel like I had to kill any darlings. I feel like I got creative in how I shaved them down and made them quicker sentences. And just that having that element of brevity as a writer to say, you know, it's not about how many words I have in the sentence, but the quality of what I'm saying. So I don't think I had to kill anything, pun intended, but if there was any spot that I could embellish on, man, that's a tough one because it was a really terrifying moment in my life that I just in the moment was so absurd. And I'm thinking, well, of course, why me? Why is this happen to me? I probably would have written more about its impact on my life in that moment, like how paranoid I was. And there were some spots that I remember trimming out about how I was so religious about studying for that class. I had my textbook with me on the treadmill. Like I just kind of had this more backstory as to the nerdiness that I was as an anatomy nerd and how nobody gets an A in that class. And I wanted to elaborate more on everything else I did to try to get that A minus. And yeah, just talking about that process too, just a little more backstory, I guess. But I think ultimately it still kind of, it worked. But yeah, if I had a few more minutes, I would have gone more into that.
Yeah, that I think is one of the hardest things about a tall tale speech is that just that short window that you have to just knock it out. Yeah, very difficult. Let's see. What were some things that you, well, I guess looking at your speech as a whole, what are your favorite parts when you are watching it or when you're performing it that you like the most during the speech?
I liked one of the most, the opening lines where I'm like, let you work on a human cadaver. I mean, I said it better than that, but that line to me was so pivotal. Narrative, because there's so many ways you can say that it would just change the whole trajectory of what the audience is going to hear. You know, if I was just like, oh, you got to work on a human cadaver. That's not as interesting, and it doesn't show my nerdiness and obsession and self, like humor at myself, like just being able to say, let you work on a human cadaver, like just completely no shame in any of that. I feel like I'm very proud of that, that changed, because up until this point, keep in mind, the district or the area and the district contests were virtual. They were on Zoom. Mm-hmm. So I had this like little box to perform in, and it's very different than being on a stage with 200 people in tables and having that. So I had to really redo my speech. And even some of the emphasis on some of the words and just the way that I use the stage, I had to almost rewrite it from one contest to the next, depending on where the audience was. And so just being able to, I don't know, just kind of dork out and use my own way of speaking and not acting someone else's words, but my own. Yeah. I just read it and it was my voice. It was 100% authentically me, for better or worse. So just those, like some of the little zingers in there, I'm like, yeah, that's me. That's,
well, you also, voice but mine. This speech is so well suited for a live audience. It was, how your gestures and your emotions are so, were wonderful and very appropriate. Were they, when you were practicing it, were your gestures the same every time, or was it, you don't even know until you're actually watching it what your actually gestures were, or were they pretty scripted in terms of your plan for giving the speech?
Very scripted. And that's my style. I think coming from acting in theater, I knew exactly what, where to look, when, what lights to hear, where my mark is here. That's my style. I don't know what other Toastmasters do. I just, for me to be my most authentic, I have to be very scripted. Mm-hmm. As weird as that might sound,
no,
I'm more comfortable knowing this is exactly what I look. I blink at this part. I move my jacket at this part. Everything I did on that stage was scripted.
Okay.
And I think that kind of developed like as I was practicing and like brushing my teeth and practicing my lines. Like you really don't know your speech until you do it while you're doing something else, driving in the car, in the shower. I'm just saying my lines and I'm trying to think of my natural gestures. As you can see, I talk with my hands. Like, it's impossible for me not to. Having to be mindful of that, not have too many gestures and making sure they're appropriate for what I'm saying. So, very rehearsed.
And then I was going to ask a little bit about that transition from, let's talk about the speech contest as a whole. Were there any things that happened during any of the contests that just you really had to overcome, whether it was technical issues or you forgot a line, and since the fact you just knew it, you just rolled with it. Anything that you remember from any of the contests that really stands out?
Not anything negative. I remember the order was, there wasn't really a rehearsal, but there was a debriefing before the doors opened, and there were 7 of us in the contest, and it was a whole randomized list of who's mm-hmm. going to go, and I was dead last, and that was interesting to me, because I thought, okay, well, maybe that will help me, because I'll be more memorable, because they say you remember the first thing and the last thing in a sequence, and the first speaker was, she blew me away. I was sitting there going, oh, wow, this is good. So I knew that I was in the right place, but there was a little bit of nerves is good. So I felt good. There was someone clipping microphone onto me. It was just very professional and very fun. And like I said, it just set the bar for future contests.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the things. The Toastmaster contests are so structured, but that only makes it better for the speakers, because then it's uniform for everybody, whether we're in Wisconsin or we're in Mexico City, you know that everybody is doing the same thing at the same time. So that is one of the cool things. Well, let's transition just a little bit. Let's, for someone who is either new to Toastmasters or thinking about Toastmasters, what can you tell them? How have you gained with doing contests and going through the Toastmaster process? What has it done for you?
I think it's certainly given me some more confidence in the different ways of public speaking. It's the pathways, 11 pathways. I should know that, but I don't remember. 7 or 11 pathways that you can, there's people in my Toastmasters group that are there because they want to improve how they facilitate meetings. There's people that want to be stand-up comedian. There's people like me just kind of try all these different voices of storytelling. And I think whatever your strengths are or interests you have, Toastmasters can give you that. Mm-hmm. And everyone's just cool. I like our meetings. Everyone's nice. It's just, it's a very supportive environment.
It is.
And I've been to a couple remote meetings and I'm like, oh, this is cool. It's just neat to see the little different flavors that other Toastmasters groups have. But it's an interesting group of like-minded people that are saying, hey, you know what? Public speaking is terrifying and I want to get better at that. Right. And that's really cool to me. And I've learned a lot and I want to keep going. This is definitely something I can see myself doing my whole life.
Yeah. I have one of my favorite Toastmaster stories is there was a woman who joined our club and she went up, her paper was shaking and she was just staring at her paper. You couldn't see her face. Within a year's time, and her motto was, she's just going to say yes to things. Basically, if you ask her to do something, she'll say yes. And she ended up about a year later giving the commencement speech at our local community college that she went to. So just to go from pass out on stage to that is it's such a remarkable transformation. It was wonderful. But
really is. And we've all been there. We've all been that person shaking with the paper. Everyone starts at a different space in their life. And it's just going out there and conquering your fear. And you're only in competition with yourself. That's how I feel. I'm just competing with me. And I'm doing all right, but I want to get better. There's no glass ceiling in public speaking. I think you can always improve, always learn from someone.
Right. And I think what you said, I think is, at least in my club as well, is the supportive nature is of everyone in there just trying. And even if they're critical, which, you know, positively critical or whatever of your speaking, it's always with from a good place, and it's always trying to make people better. So it's a wonderful thing to see.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, let's see. What else? What are my other just last few questions here before we wrap it up? So what advice would you give to somebody who said, I want to do a speech contest, and they don't know what they want to write about or what that speech contest speech or tall tale speech would be? How would you help them? What would advice would you give in terms of getting that speech from I want to do it to standing up on stage? What advice could you give?
Ooh. Yeah, well, be patient with yourself. You're not going to get it right the first time. You're not going to write it the way you want. You're going to say your lines and it's going to sound terrible, and you're going to rewrite it a lot of times. That's honest to goodness my first advice. Just, you're not going to write the perfect story right away. But you need to just think of not so much what your audience is. You want to think about what's the goal? Like, what is my one sentence? What am I trying to tell this person? Am I trying to humor them? Am I trying to inspire them? Am I trying to teach my audience something? And focus your speech on that answer, but don't be afraid to use your own authentic voice. As a writer and as a published writer too, and as a performer in my earlier life, it's, you know, I want to know what the audience wants, and that's what I'm going to give that way. And there's a lot of training and a lot of mistakes that come involved with that. But it's a fine line between what's the audience want and what do I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. It's very hard to say it unless once you start getting that flow and you're writing your ideas and you're practicing your voice and you're practice in front of friends, practice in front of coworkers. Practice with my mom. I was like, does it sound okay? You know, I want to gauge the audience. And so you really have to know your audience more before you can hone in on your own voice, I guess. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. And I think that's one of the things I struggle with is I have speeches. The speeches are happening up here, but I have to always remember to who am I speaking to is the difficult part.
Right. And with tall tales, at least I had this, okay, it should be funny. There should be, I need to make them laugh, you know? And so there's those little tricks. And when you see what you're being judged on and the criteria, that kind of helps me reverse engineer what I want to write.
Well, before I let you go, is there anything else that I didn't ask you about, either your speaking or what your future plans are in Toastmasters, or anything additional?
I just want to keep telling strange stories, and my whole life has just been a lot of weird and unusual things, like, you know, cadaver dropping and a bunch of other things in my life. And I'd like to have it, I guess, if that's the right word, to share this weirdness and say, you know what, if I can go up in front of 200 people and tell them the time that I allegedly dropped a corpse on his head and it's okay. Like, fine. And I thought, yeah, I could come in last place. I could come in first place. I don't really care. I just am there to have fun and create an experience for people. And it works. And so I want to just keep doing that. And whether they like my story or disturbed by it, you're correct. Your interpretation and your reaction to my artwork is what it needs to be. And I'm just glad they're there and they enjoyed it. So
with that, Kirsty, thank you for sharing your art with us. Thank you for sharing your story. And I hope that the cadaver has long since been, you know, disposed of or whatever at this point, because And to all those aspiring people, you know, doing autopsies, that, you know, good luck. And this is.
I had to show off my trophy. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yep.
Yay. This is for Joe.
Congratulations.
Wherever he may be.
Yep. That's so funny. Well, with that, I want to say thank you for helping me with my project and helping me get better at my interviewing and podcasting skills. So, I hope you have a you know, wonderful future career in Toastmasters. And I'm sure that our paths will cross again sometime soon. So with that, I want to say thank you.
That.
Yeah. Thank you. And I hope everybody has enjoyed this podcast.